This is the Authentic Persuasion Show. Hey everybody, Jason here. Again, another special guest episode series. This is going to be part one about authenticity. Welcome to the Authentic Persuasion Show. My mission is to help fill the world with authentic persuaders. So you being here, taking in this content, watching the videos, or listening on the podcast means so much to me because hopefully we can shift the perception of sales, how people do sales, and help people be successful in sales, make more money, close more deals, help more people, and just make it into a successful career. I'm excited for this guest. We have been, you know, rescheduling and postponing it and moving it around, and most of that's my fault. And I'm super excited for this for multiple reasons, just in the conversations we've had. I've got Dr. Dimitri Kapalianis on the podcast today with me. He is from the University of New Mexico Center for Sales and Business Development. He is the director of the center at the university. He's a tenured professor of marketing. He teaches, researches, consults, runs the sales teams of the students, and so much, which is where we got connected initially, and very excited. Dr. Dimitri, welcome to the Authentic Persuasion Show.
Jason, thank you so much for the opportunity to chat with you. I've been looking forward to this conversation for a long, long time.
And I have as well. I have reached out to, spoke with a lot of sales professors, obviously having many of your group in on the podcast so far in season seven. And one of the things I appreciate about you so much is you're very open. You're like the relationship I have with Dr. Sterling Bone from Utah State, where you're very open. You want to learn, you're curious, and then you're also like running teams with your students, running campaigns with your students to help them learn sales. And I think that's fascinating and fun. I just love the stuff that you're doing there. In this conversation, part one, let's talk about authenticity. Let's talk about your journey prior to and then leading into the world of education and what you did in sales prior to this.
Thanks for the opportunity to give you some background. So as you can tell by my accent, I'm not originally from the United States. And the combination of the accent and the name normally causes people some cognitive dissonance. It's a Greek name, but a South African accent. So back in South Africa, I straddled the boundary between commerce and academia. So I worked in commercial market research, data analysis, consulting work. But I also worked as a lecturer and did academic research and academic teaching. And at some point I decided, well, you know, kind of, I really want to focus on academia. That's my first love, my primary love. And I came to the States to read for a PhD at Arizona State University. And I was fortunate to have some incredible mentors, including Dr. Beth Walker and Dr. Mike Hutt, who co-chaired my dissertation. And they both had this idea that, yes, an academic dissertation needs to be theoretically sound and methodologically rigorous, but really importantly, you've got to solve a problem that a company cares about. And one way that you know that a company cares about this problem is that they're willing to give you a lot of money to work on the problem. So IBM funded my dissertation research, and the question I answered in my dissertation is, what are salespeople doing in these large, complex sales engagements? What are they doing when they're winning these engagements versus what are the same people doing when they're losing these engagements? So average engagement size is about $25 million. It takes 6 months to 18 months to put together a proposal for the customer. And it's not about the salespeople, right? Because it's the same salesperson who's sometimes winning and sometimes losing. It's about what they're doing when they show up. And so that really triggered my love of sales and my interest in sales. My first placement after completing my PhD was at Emory University in Atlanta. For 5 years, I taught a course called Sales and Business Development. And then I came to UNM. Also taught marketing, taught sales, and I really wanted to start a sales center. And this was something I'd seen happening around the country and taking off. And I thought, this is so important. Our students need to have the skill set. And there wasn't a lot of interest or buy-in from colleagues. I think a lot of my colleagues had very negative stereotypes about what sales is. And I spent an 18-month stint as associate dean. And during that time, I built up a lot of goodwill and social capital and political capital. And when my time came to an end, as I'm walking out the door, I told the dean, look, I really want to start a sales center. This is incredibly important to me. And I'll make you two promises. One, I will never embarrass you. Two, I will not ask you for a penny. We will self-fund from day one. And the only thing that I ask of you in return is to get out of the way. You know, I'm rather going to apologize if I do something wrong than constantly come and ask you for permission for what I'm doing. And so the dean said, yes, go ahead and do it. And that's where we are now. So kind of this long, winding road of academia, industry, research, data analysis, consulting work to where I am now doing research and teaching focused on sales.
When you were in South Africa before coming to the US for the PhD part, had you done sales, been in any type of sales role, or was it mostly academic?
So the kind of selling that I was doing was build and sell. So I worked as an account executive for a research house, and how you get most of your work, so new work comes in primarily through responding to RFPs. And then the kind of, you know, once you've secured a client, then you're trying to cross sell, upsell, and get a bigger share of the book of business. So the key thing that I learned there was, because it's build and sell, never overpromise, because whatever you sell, you have to build. You are the person who's going to deliver on the promise that you sold. And so I think I learned very, very early on in my career, don't overpromise. Watch what you promise, because you've got to deliver on that promise, and your reputation is on the line if you can't. So not a traditional sales role, more kind of an account management, account executive sales role.
Yeah. And so just on that topic for a moment, it's interesting because I think so many times what can give people salespeople bad reputation and or make salespeople struggle so much is when they overpromise and oversell or sell something that's not there. Customer gets upset, or there's cancellations, or there's retention issues, or there are all kinds of challenges. Was that easy to do? Were other people having difficulties with it? Because that's not a standard thing for salespeople to not overpromise or ignore the things that something doesn't do. It's not even overpromise. Sometimes it's right. Like just the under deliver.
I think it's a sort of a self-selection issue. You know, if you think about researchers, whether they academic researchers or commercial researchers or analysts or consultants, that whole group of people, like their primary thing in life, the thing that they value more than anything else is the truth. That's what they're in search of. And so kind of when that's your primary interest, like what is the truth, then you go, why would I say this thing that isn't true in order to close the deal? You'd rather not close the deal than say something that's untrue. And so I think it's just kind of a self-selection thing that people who work in that line of business, what they're most interested in is the truth. I don't think I struggled with it or people struggled with it. The part that maybe becomes more difficult later on is, okay, you're given this huge number maybe, and you go, how am I going to get this number? How am I going to achieve this number?
Yeah. So fast forwarding to the conversation you had with the dean, obviously you sold the dean, right? And you were successful. You closed the deal and getting the permission, which is fascinating because I talk about all the time where closing the sale, what a salesperson thinks is their end point, is the beginning of something, right? It's the beginning of the relationship between the customer and the company, right? It's not the end. It is actually the beginning. And so what you're talking about is the beginning of, then you had to actually fulfill that, like account management. Why do you think that offer was so successful at that point? I know you said you had the capital, like the social and the political capital, but like why in that moment, you know, did you Did you authentically close that deal, let's say?
I think two things. So one was having a lot of goodwill with the dean at that time. But secondly, you know, the hardest part of starting the sales center by far was the internal sell. Like once the internal sell, not just with the dean, but with my colleagues, once that was secured, the rest was easy. It was just execution on the promise. But one thing that I did was I turned to LinkedIn data. So we had a professional selling course in the catalog. It hadn't been taught for a long time. It did not count towards the marketing major. So if you took professional selling as a student, you could not use that as credit hours towards major. It was really sales is, no, we shouldn't do this as a university. That's kind of really gross. And so I brought up the business school's LinkedIn profile page. So if you have a LinkedIn profile and you are an alum of a university, when you indicate in your LinkedIn profile what you do, so I work in the marketing function, I work in sales or business development, what have you, that aggregates up to the business school's profile page and to the university's profile page. And you can do this for any university. I encourage you to go and do this for your alma mater. There's a alum tab. So click on the alum tab and it'll show you where do the alums live, what do they do, what did they study, etc. So for our business school at the time, number one was business development and number two was sales. And I knew we weren't teaching business development or sales. So in other words, our alums are doing things when they graduate that we're not preparing them to do. And I thought, shame on us. You know, what an incredible shortcoming on our part that our students are basically going out into the world, having secured a degree, and they are totally unprepared for what they're going to actually end up doing. And so that piece of data, that piece of evidence was very compelling to my colleagues that, oh, okay, we do actually need to train and prepare our students to take roles in sales and business development.
And I love that, right? Like if we, you know, look at that in the second part of our conversation with sales process, but fundamentally it's you looking at the data and then in selling that way, but then also the long-term relationship. Like you said, I think it's like 18 months of going about that. So you come from a selling background that's more account management than like sales, right? Like in you know, versus what a lot of other people like the business development and the sales people from your university might get into. Then you go into teaching it and researching it. And so how do you approach that, you know, with the students from the authenticity side of sales, like in helping them understand that?
So I think there are kind of a couple of components to this. The first is persuading students to take a sales class. Let me tell you that very much fewer than 1% of students come to a university and say, you know what, mom and dad, I want to be a salesperson. That just doesn't happen. They come to university and they're going to become marketers or influencers on social media, or they're going to become accountants, or they're going to get CFAs or something else, but definitely they are not going to become salespeople. Okay. And so the first thing I do is I sell my class. I have a little pitch video that I share with all the advisors when registration rolls around for the next semester. And it's 5 minutes long and why you should consider a course in sales. I will go to the core classes a couple of weeks before registration and pitch students on taking a course in sales. I have a great reputation. There's a lot of word of mouth. I use social media a lot to get out the word of what it is that we're doing. So the first thing is you've got to get students to register for the course, and most of them have never thought about doing this. Okay, now they're sitting in the course, and they go, this guy wants me to be a salesperson. And so they sit like this. I'm not going to let him contaminate me. And what you've got to do there is challenge and upend their stereotypes of what they think a salesperson is. Because what they think a salesperson is someone who is inauthentic, manipulative, slimy, gross, short-term transactional. And by the end of the semester, if I've done my job properly, they know that a salesperson is someone who's authentic, helping other people, other companies solve their problems, is genuine and sincere. So that's kind of the what the sales component of selling the sales program looks like.
I love it. I haven't heard any other professor talk about that intentional process of selling the course itself instead of, you know, what standards, just put it in the catalog and hope people sign up and hope that, you know, some momentum builds. So I love that. And I think what's fascinating and fun, and I always look at this from the angles, and that's why I love these sales programs at pretty much all the universities where they're corporate sponsored, is to make the program successful. The people, the faculty involved are out there basically enrolling, selling sponsors, companies who are then involved. Like if you're a sales program and you don't have any corporate sponsors, that's not a very good program, because it means you're not very good at the fundamentals of sales. And so I love the fact that you're like, all right. And if people see the video and they like what they're hearing, that means you're effective at that part, which means it's going to be effective for them. And I absolutely love that. What's that transition like for them from the perceptions about sales on the growth side to where you get them to at the end?
You can sometimes see it visibly. There's one student I have in mind. So kind of first couple of days of the class, he's leaning back, he's sitting back, he's like, you're not getting me, I'm just blocking. And so we have corporate partners, and I bring corporate partners in as guest speakers once a week, and I always encourage and advise the person representing our corporate partner, who's normally typically a VP of sales, that's kind of fairly common, bring someone along who you've already hired out of the program recently, who looks a little bit more like our students than you do. I love you very much, and you know a lot about sales, but you're not necessarily going to connect with the students. And so this student, I remember, he's sitting back, he's leaning back, the partner comes in, VP of sales and a salesperson. And the salesperson looks a lot like the student. And the salesperson starts chatting, and the student just hands it down, and he's got this kind of quizzical look on his face, and he starts leaning in, he starts leaning forward. It's like, oh, I've got you. You're going to be a salesperson. You can watch the body language. You can see that transition somewhere in their head. The belief system changed, like, oh, hang on, this is not gross. I'm helping a person solve a problem that's really important. And so when you change your mindset about what a salesperson does, then the rest is kind of easy.
Interesting thought, and I could save this for part three, but it's on my mind right now. I'm just thinking about it. So many professors I've talked to have like the day one activity about what are the words that you think about sales, and there's this bad side, and then there's the good side, and obviously that's where you want to get people to, and that's what you're talking about. In the sales programs, what you're doing is you're helping the professional people understand sales, whether they end up in sales or not, but they're understanding professional, like B2B sales and more like that. Do you see any way to shift it on the transactional side that's causing people to have that perception of gross sales? Like your program will help the B2B side, but what about that 20-year-old before they're sitting in your class that thinks that sales is gross because of other people? Think there's a way to shift that?
That's a great question. So you know, one of the reasons why students have these negative perceptions of sales is because of transactional sales. And so if when you think about transactional sales, there's no long-term, there's no reputation. My incentive as a human being is to put my hand into your pocket and take out as much money as I possibly can, whether it's good for you or not, because we're not going to see each other again. And so I think the way to start thinking about that is kind of around identity, that yes, this might be a transactional sale, but it's still my job to help you. And word of mouth still helps you sell. So even though it's transactional and it's one-off, it's so much easier to get new business through positive word of mouth that another customer has generated for you, rather than doing 100 cold calls. You know, so even if you're doing a transactional sale, I think it's still in your best interest to really be ethical, to really be authentic, to help the person solve their problem and let them become your salesperson.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just the interesting thought I had, like all of these programs and all that, the stuff that you do as a professor and the other professors is shifting the way that sales is being done from the beginning with salespeople entering into a professional sales role. But there's just that transactional side that just is what it is. And like you said, I mean, the incentive is to separate someone from as much money as you can and hopefully ethically and legally.
I this idea for a moment. Over time, we've had a couple of B2C transactional corporate partners. I'd say mostly with one exception, it hasn't worked great. And I'm much more hesitant about signing up B2C transactional corporate partners for this very reason, that oftentimes you discover that the company's culture is really this kind of transactional manipulative culture. And so I'm much more careful about screening that. The one exception is a home builder. And if you kind of think about this, you know, a home builder is building something that costs $300,000, $500,000. It is the single largest, most important transaction a consumer will ever engage in their life. And from the home builder's perspective, that salesperson is not productive for 6 months. You need to train them. They need to get a real estate license. They're on your books not selling anything for 6 months. And then once they start selling, you only get money at closing 6 months later. They've got to carry you for a year. And so they really want to think very carefully about who do I hire out of this program. And one of our best corporate partners has been a home builder because I think they really understand the importance of ethics and authenticity, even though it is a B2C transactional sale.
And I could see if we just keep going with that, is that it's a quality over quantity sale.
Yes.
Right? It's not I'm selling 30 cars this month. It's I'm selling 10 houses this year or whatever that builder, you know, the scale. They could be doing thousands, but like whatever that is, it's more quality over quantity. And then again, this is where what you're saying too is really important, is the reputation of a home builder is all that they've got. If they get a bad reputation for what they build, it will spread and no one's going to want to buy what they sell. And so the reputation is super important.
Yes.
And I could see that, like that intersection actually being, you know, something where you want a professional salesperson instead of just anybody.
Right. Totally.
So if we look at the flip side, based on the research, based on the students, based on the corporate partners, what is it that you think buyers want, potential buyers want from a salesperson?
Buyers, and this is both, I think, true for B2C and B2B, do not want to be sold. They do not want to feel as if they're being sold. Like every person, but especially a person in buying mode, can smell a pitch, can smell inauthenticity from a mile away. So what a buyer wants is they want to trust you. They want to believe that you're working in their best interests, and they want you to understand their problem and help them solve their problem. Everything else, I think, is a distraction in the way of getting to that solution, solving the problem.
So how do you teach that, especially from an authentic standpoint, where somebody sees that that is the need from a buyer? And so from a salesperson, they're doing that, but also like maybe fighting that instinct of, well, my job is to sell, right?
I think kind of, you know, if you think about elements of the sales process, kind of just the basic sales process, presentation versus discovery. You know, when we think about bad salespeople, we think about people who launch into presentation. Like I've got the solution for you and I'm going to talk about the solution. And oh my gosh, look at all these bells and whistles. And I'm going to talk about the attributes of the product. Whereas really the most important part of the basic sales process is discovery, is really asking good questions, caring about the answers and listening to the answers and paying a lot of attention. And this thing comes back to the ability to have authentic conversations and authentic communication. You know, in a conversation, authenticity happens when you feel that the other person's really listening to you and wants to know more about you. And that's not a thing that you can fake. I mean, it's either true or it's not true. Now, in the case of sales, you're having those conversations towards another purpose. And the other purpose is not to sell the product. The other purpose is to help that person solve their problem. If you can always have that mind shift, like my first job is to help you solve your problem. When I achieve that job, I achieve my goal of selling a product.
I love that. My first job is to help you solve a problem, right? And I think that's one of the biggest things is what you're saying is when the discovery comes first, presentation comes second, and then it's shifting. Instead of sales is something I'm doing to you, sales is something I'm doing for you and with you, because my goal is to help you solve a problem. And then is there an intersection of solving your problem and what I offer? And if so, great. If not, that's also okay.
Right, right. And I do think that, and if not, that's also okay. That requires you to have self-confidence, you know, that you're going to hit your number. It requires you to have support from your management team, that you don't have this crazy, unrealistic number. And so you kind of get this panic breath because you think you're not going to hit your number. That is something that buyers can also detect from a mile away. Again, your primary interest is hitting your number. Your primary interest is not in helping me solve my problem.
I love it. Well, we've already jumped ahead to get into the sales process, but I think it's perfect because I love what you're saying, which is where, you know, the what buyers want is a process that's focused on them, where you authentically care, and then it leads into what is the better order of the process. So I'm excited to chat with that about that more in part two when we talk about the sales process. As we wrap this up, for people who want to connect with you, the time flew. I can't believe we're already 27 minutes in. People want to find you, they can find you on LinkedIn. And again, it's Dimitri Kapalianis. I will get smoother and smoother as we go through this for sure. I always just call you Dr. Dimitri. And then also the University of New Mexico program, the sales program, the link will be in the show notes. You can also Google it. It's salescenter.mgt.unm.edu. Not the shortest one, not the worst one I've seen. But you know, we'll put it somewhere in the middle. It's kind of like you with your Greek name, with your South African accents. Like it's interesting. It's definitely you know, a pattern interrupt for sure. Dr. Dimitri, thanks for being on here and sharing you know, this first part, this first conversation with the audience. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Jason.
And for people tuning in, make sure to check out part two. We've already kind of gotten to it. We're going to dive into it more. We're going to talk about sales process and persuasion and really what that involves in this day and age. If you're here, there's a reason you're listening to this. There's something for you to get. Hopefully you got it. Hopefully you're taking notes. And as always, thank you for tuning in, for being a part of this journey and helping fill the world with authentic persuaders.